Circles. I see the Mother Confessor running around in circles.
Circles? Kaelin asked as she stepped closer. Why am I running in circles? I can't tell.
Well, I feel as if I'm running in circles right now, trying to find a way to pull the Midlands back together.
Jebra looked up hopefully.
That may be it.
Kaelin offered her a smile.
Maybe it is. Your visions aren't always of calamity.
As they all started to go back to cleaning up, Jebra spoke again.
Mother Confessor, we mustn't leave your sister alone with any ropes.
What do you mean?
Jebra let out a breath.
She is dreaming of hanging herself.
You mean that you have seen a vision of her hanging herself?
Jebra laid a concerned hand to Kaelin's arm.
Oh no, Mother Confessor, I've not seen that. It's just that I can see the aura, see that she is dreaming of doing it.
It does not mean she will, only that we must watch her, so she won't have the chance before she can recover.
That sounds like sound advice, Zed offered.
Jebra tied the leftover bread in a cloth.
I will sleep with her tonight.
Thank you, Kaelin said. Why don't you let me finish cleaning up and you go to bed now, in case she wakes?
Zed, Addy, and Kaelin shared the chores after Jebra took her bedroll into the room with Cirilla. When they were finished, Zed placed a chair before the fire for Addy. Kaelin loosely twined her fingers together and stood looking into the flames.
Zed,
when we send the delegations to the smaller lands to ask them to come to a council in Ebenicia, it would be easier to convince them if it were an official delegation from the Mother Confessor.
Zed finally broke the quiet.
They all think the Mother Confessor is dead. If we let them know you're alive, then you become a target, and it would bring the order down on us before we could gather a strong enough force.
Kaelin turned and gripped his robes.
Zed, I'm tired of being dead.
He patted her hand on his arm.
You're the Queen of Galia, and you can use your influence in that way for now. If the Imperial Order finds out you're alive, then we'll have more trouble than we're prepared to handle.
If we're going to unite the Midlands, then they need a Mother Confessor.
Kaelin, I know you don't want to do anything to jeopardize the lives of those men out there. They've just won a costly battle. They aren't strong enough yet. We need more gathered to our side. If anyone knows you are the Mother Confessor, then you become a target, and they will have to fight to protect you. If you must fight, it must be for the right reasons. We don't need more problems than we can handle right now.
Kaelin pressed the tips of her fingers together as she stared into the fire.
Zed, I am the Mother Confessor. I'm terrified I will be the Mother Confessor who presides over the destruction of the Midlands. I was born a confessor. It's more than my job. It's who I am.
Zed hugged her shoulders.
Dear one, you are still the Mother Confessor. That's why we must hide your identity for now. We need the Mother Confessor. When the time comes, you will rule over the Midlands again, a Midland stronger than it has ever been. Have patience.
Patience, she muttered.
Ah, well, he said with a grin. There is magic in patience, too, you know.
Zed be right, Addy said from her chair. The wolf does not survive if he announces to the herd he be a wolf. He makes his plans of attack, and only at the last moment lets the prey know that it be he, the wolf, who be after them.
Kaelin rubbed her arms. There was more to it, another reason.
Zed, she whispered with the pain of it. I can't stand this spell any longer. It's driving me mad. I can feel it all the time, like death walking in my flesh with me.
Zed pulled her head to a shoulder.
My daughter used to say the same thing. Those very words, in fact. Like death walking in my flesh with me. How did she stand it all those years?
Zed sighed.
Well, when Darkon Rall raped her, I knew that if he thought she was alive, he would come after her. There was no choice. I wanted to protect her more than I wanted to go after him. I took her to the Midlands, where Richard was born, and then she had another reason to hide. If Darkon Rall ever knew, he might have come after Richard, too, so she had to endure it.
Kaelin shuddered.
All those years. I wouldn't have the strength. How could she stand it? Well, there was no alternative, for one thing. And for another, she said that after a time she became used to it a bit, and it wasn't so bad as it was in the beginning. The feeling will ease a bit over time. You will get used to it, and hopefully you will not have to go on long like this.
I hope so, Keelan said.
The firelight flickered on Zed's thin face.
She also said that having Richard lessened the burden.
Keelan's heart leapt at the mere mention aloud of his name. She grinned.
That will surely help.
She clutched Zed's arm.
He'll be here soon. He won't let anything hold him back. He'll be here in a couple of weeks at the most. Dear spirits, how will I ever wait that long?
Zed chuckled.
You have as little patience as that boy. You two were made for each other.
He brushed back her hair.
Your eyes look better already, dear one.
Then when Richard is with us and we start pulling the Midlands back together, you can take this death spell off me. Then the Midlands will have a mother confessor again.
It can't be soon enough for me either.
Keelan frowned.
Zed, if you go away to see Queen Catherine and I need to get this spell off, how can I do it?
Zed looked back to the flames.
You can't. If you were to announce that you were the mother confessor, people would believe you no more than if Jebra were to announce that she was the mother confessor. The spell won't leave because you simply declare who you are.
Then how do I get it off?
Zed sighed.
Only I can do that.
Keelan felt a sudden flush of fear. She didn't want to voice it, but she would be trapped with a spell if anything happened to Zed.
But surely there must be another way to remove the spell. Perhaps Richard?
Zed shook his head.
Even if Richard knew how to be a wizard, he could not remove the web. Only I can do it.
And that's the only way.
Yes.
He looked back to her eyes.
Unless, of course, another with the gift were to deduce your true identity. If such a man were to see you, understand who you were, and name you aloud, then it would break the spell, and all would once again know your identity.
There was no hope of that. She felt her hopes sink. Keelan squatted and shoved another stick of wood in the fire. The only way she was going to get the death spell off was for Zed to do it, and he wasn't going to do it until he was good and ready. As Mother Confessor, she would not order a wizard to do something both knew was wrong. Keelan watched the sparks swirling up. She brightened. Richard would be with her soon, and it wouldn't be so bad then. When Richard was with her, she wouldn't think about the spell. She would be too busy kissing him.
What's funny? Zed asked.
What?
Oh, nothing.
She stood and brushed her hands off on her pants.
I think I'll go check on the men. Maybe some cold air will get this spell off my mind.
The cold air did feel good. She stood in the clearing outside the small farmhouse and took a deep breath. The wood smoke smelled good. She recalled the previous days when they were on the march, and her feet and fingers felt frozen, when her ears burned with a bite of cold and her nose ran, how she daydreamed about wood smoke because it meant the warmth of a fire. Keelan strolled across the field outside the house. She stared up at the stars, her breath drifting slowly in the still air. She could see small fires dotting the valley beyond, and she could hear the murmur of conversation of the men sitting around the fires. She was glad they too could have fires this night. Soon they would be at Ebenicia, and they could be warm again. Keelan took a deep breath of the cold air, trying to forget the spell. The whole sky was a glitter with stars, like sparks from a huge fire. She wondered what Richard was doing right now, and if he was riding hard or getting sleep. She longed to see him, but she also wanted him to get enough sleep. When he finally reached her, she could sleep in his arms. She grinned at the thought. Keelan frowned as a swath of stars went dark. Almost as soon as they darkened, they winked back to points of light. Had she really seen them go dark for an instant? Must be her imagination, she thought. She heard a thud as something hit the ground. No alarm went up. Only one thing could get through the ring of defenders and not raise an alarm. She tingled in sudden goose flesh, and it wasn't the spell. Keelan yanked her knife free. Chapter 34. She saw glowing green eyes. In the faint light coming from the small winter moon and the stars, she saw a great hulk step toward her. Keelan wanted to cry out, but her voice wasn't there. When the huge beast's lips drew back, she saw the entire length of its prodigious fangs. She staggered back a step. She was squeezing the knife handle so hard that her fingers ached. If she was quick, and if she didn't panic, she might have a chance. If she called out, would Zed hear her? Would anyone hear her? Even if they did, they were too far away. They wouldn't be able to get to her in time. In the dim light, she could see by its size that it was a short-tailed gar. It would have to be a short-tailed gar. They were the smartest, the biggest, the most deadly. Dear spirits, why couldn't it be a long-tailed gar? Kaelin stared as it lifted something from its chest. Why was it just standing there? Where were its blood flies? It looked down, looked up at her, and looked down again. The eyes glowed a menacing green. Its lips drew back farther, vapor clouding the air when it let out a gurgling sound. Kaelin's eyes went wide. Could it be? Gratch? The gar suddenly started jumping up and down, howling with excitement and flapping its wings. Kaelin sagged with heady relief. She sheathed her knife and stepped closer to the towering beast, but she was still cautious.
Gratch? Is that you, Gratch?
The gar vigorously nodded his huge, grotesque head.
Gratch!
He called out in a deep growl that resonated in her breastbone. He thumped his chest with both claws.
Gratch!
Gratch, did Richard send you?
The gar's wings flapped more energetically at the mention of Richard's name. She came closer.
Did Richard send you?
Gratch la Gratchog.
Kaelin blinked. Richard had told her that Gratch tried to talk. She suddenly giggled. Kaelin loves Richard, too. She tapped her chest.
I'm Kaelin, Gratch. I'm so happy to meet you.
She gasped as the gar lunged forward and scooped her up in his furry arms, lifting her feet clear of the ground. Her first thought was that he was surely going to crush her, but he was surprisingly gentle as he held her to his smooth chest. Kaelin reached around the great body and hugged the gar's sides. She couldn't get her arms even halfway around him. Kaelin could never have imagined doing such a thing, but now she was brought nearly to tears, because Gratch was Richard's friend, and Richard had sent the gar to her. It was almost as if it were a hug sent from Richard himself. The gar carefully set her on the ground. He studied her with his glowing green eyes. She stroked a hand along the fur at the side of his chest as the hulking creature reached down and tenderly stroked her hair with a huge, deadly claw. Kaelin grinned up at the wrinkled face full of fangs. Gratch let out a purling gurgle. His wings moved in slow, contented sweeps as she stroked his fur, and he stroked her hair.
You're safe here with us, Gratch. Richard told me all about you. I don't know how much you can understand, but you're among friends.
When his lips drew back, again exposing the full length of his fangs, she suddenly realized it was a smile. It was the ugliest smile she had ever seen, but it had an innocent quality to it that made her grin, too. She had never in her life thought that gars could smile. It truly was a marvel.
Gratch, did Richard send you?
Ratchog!
Gratch thumped his chest. He flapped his wings hard enough that it briefly lifted his feet from the ground. Then he reached out and tapped Kaelin's shoulder. Kaelin's mouth fell open. The gar was telling her something, and she understood.
Richard sent you to find me.
Gratch went wild with glee that she understood. He scooped her up in his arms again. She laughed at the whole marvelous nature of it all. When he set her down again, she asked,
Was it hard to find me?
He let out a whine and shrugged. It was a little bit hard. Gratch nodded. Kaelin knew a wide variety of languages, but she couldn't help laughing again at the very idea of communicating with a gar. She shook her head in wonder. Who but Richard would think to befriend a gar? Kaelin took a claw up in her hand.
Come on in the house. There is someone I want you to meet.
Gratch gurgled his assent. Kaelin paused in the doorway. Zed and Addie looked up from their chairs beside the fire.
I'd like to introduce a friend, she said as she pulled Gratch in behind her by a claw.
He ducked under the doorframe, folding his wings to fit through, and then, once inside, straightened to nearly his full height behind her, still stooping a bit to fit under the ceiling. Zed toppled backward in his chair, his skinny arms and legs flailing at the air.
Zed, stop it! You're going to frighten him, she scolded.
Frighten him? Zed croaked.
You told me that Richard said it was a baby gar. That thing is nearly full grown.
Gratch's massive eyebrows drew together in a frown as he watched the wizard scramble to his feet and tug at his tangled robes. Kaelin held a hand out.
Gratch, this is Richard's grandfather, Zed.
The leathery lips drew back, showing the fangs again. Gratch held his claws out and started across the room. Zed flinched and stumbled back.
Why is he doing that? Has he had dinner?
Kaelin laughed so hard she could hardly get the words out. "He's smiling. He likes you. He wants a hug." "A hug? Most certainly not." It was too late. With only 3 strides, the guard had closed the distance in the small room and was already scooping up the bony wizard in his huge furry arms. Zed let out a muffled cry. Gratch gurgled a giggle as he lifted Zed from his feet.
"Bags!" Zed tried unsuccessfully to back away from the guard's breath. "This flying rug is eaten, and you don't want to know what!"
Gratch finally set Zed down. The wizard scrambled back a few steps and shook his finger at the beast.
"Now look here. We'll have no more of that. You just keep your arms to yourself."
Gratch wilted, again letting out a purling whine.
"Zed," Kaelin admonished, "you've hurt his feelings. He's Richard's friend, and ours too, and he's had a difficult time finding us. The least you can do is be nice to him."
Zed harumphed.
"Well, perhaps you're right."
He peered up at the hopeful beast.
"I'm sorry, Gratch. On occasion, I suppose it would be all right for you to hug me."
Before the wizard could lift his arms to try to hold the guard back, Gratch had again scooped him up and was hugging him like a rag doll, Zed's feet swinging to and fro. Gratch, at last, set the gasping wizard to the floor. Addy held out a hand to shake.
"I be Addy, Gratch. I be pleased to meet you."
Gratch ignored the hand and threw his furry arms around her, too. Kaelin had often seen Addy smile, but she rarely let out her raspy laugh. She was laughing now. Gratch laughed with her in his own rumbling way. When order was restored to the room and everyone had caught their breath, Kaelin saw Jebra's wide eyes peeking out from a slit in the bedroom door.
"It's all right, Jebra. It's Gratch, a friend of ours."
Kaelin clamped a restraining grip to the fur of Gratch's arm.
"You can hug her later."
Gratch shrugged with a nod. Kaelin turned him toward her and took up one of his claws in both of her hands. She looked up into his glowing green eyes.
"Gratch, did Richard send you on ahead to tell us he will be here soon?"
Gratch shook his head. Kaelin swallowed.
"But he's on his way. He's left Aidendrill and he's on his way to catch up with us?"
Gratch studied her face. His claw came up and stroked her hair. Kaelin saw that he had a lock of her hair on a leather thong at his throat, along with the dragon's tooth. He slowly shook his head again. Kaelin's heart sank like a rock in a well.
"He's not on his way? But he sent you to me?"
Gratch nodded, adding a small flap of his wings.
"Why? Do you know why?"
Gratch nodded. He reached over his shoulder and caught hold of something hanging on his back by another thong. He pulled a long red object over his shoulder and held it out to her at the end of the thong.
"What is it?" Zed asked.
Kaelin started working the knot free.
"It's a document case. Maybe it's a letter from Richard."
Gratch nodded at the guess. When she had freed the knot, she asked Gratch to sit down. He squatted contentedly to the side as Kaelin drew the rolled and flattened letter from the pouch. Zed sat beside Addy next to the fire.
"Let's hear the boy's excuses, and they had better be good ones, or he is in a lot of trouble."
"I agree with you about that," she said under her breath.
"There's enough wax on this thing for 2 dozen letters. We need to teach Richard how to seal a document." She turned it in the light.
"It's the sword.
He's pressed the hilt of the Sword of Truth into the wax."
"So we will know it's truly from him,"
Zed observed as he fed a piece of wood into the fire. When she had finished breaking all the wax, Kaelin unfurled the letter and turned her back to the fire so she could read it.
"My dearest queen," she read aloud, "I pray to the good spirits that this letter reaches your hands."
Zed shot to his feet.
"That's a message,"
Kaelin frowned at him.
"Well, of course it is. It's his letter."
He waved his thin hand.
"No, no, I mean he's telling us something. I know Richard. I know the way he thinks. He's telling us he fears that if someone were to get their hands on this letter, it might betray us, or him. So he's warning us that he can't say everything he might like to."
Kaelin pulled her lower lip through her teeth.
"Yes, that would make sense. Richard usually thinks things through."
Zed gestured as he turned to make sure his bony bottom would hit the chair as he sat.
"Go on."
"My dearest queen, I pray to the good spirits that this letter reaches your hands and it finds you and your friends well and safe. Much has happened, and I must beg your understanding. The Alliance of the Midlands is ended. Overhead, Magda Cirrus, the first Mother Confessor and her wizard Merit, glare down upon me. Because they have witnessed its end, and because it is I who have ended it. Realize that I know full well the weight of thousands of years of history staring down upon me from overhead, but please try to understand that if I had not acted, then our only future would be as slaves to the Imperial Order, and then that history would be forgotten. Keelan put a hand to her chest over her thumping heart, and paused to gulp air before she went on. Months ago, the Imperial Order began the undoing of the Alliance, winning converts to their side, and unraveling the unity that was the Midlands. As we fought the Keeper, they fought to steal the security of our home. Perhaps there would have been a chance to bring unity once more had we the luxury of time, but the Order presses their plans and denies us that luxury. With the Mother Confessor dead, I was forced to do what must be done to forge unity.
What? What has he done? Zed croaked.
Keelan shot him a silencing glare over the top of the trembling letter, and then went on. Delay is weakness, and weakness is death at the hands of the Order. Our beloved Mother Confessor knew the cost of failure, and has charged us with carrying this war to victory. She has declared this a war without mercy on the Imperial Order. Her wisdom in this was infallible. The Alliance, however, was fragmented with self-interest. This was a prelude to ruin. I was forced to act. My troops have captured Adendrill. Zed exploded.
Bags and double bags! What's he talking about? He has no troops. He just has his sword and this flying rug with fangs.
Gratch rose with a growl. Zed flinched. Keelan blinked away the tears.
Be quiet, both of you.
Zed glanced from her to the Gar.
Sorry, Gratch. No offense intended.
They both sank back down as she went on. Today I gathered the representatives of the lands here in Adendrill and informed them that the Alliance of the Midlands is dissolved. My troops have surrounded their palaces and will shortly have disarmed their soldiers. I told them, as I will tell you, that there are only two sides in this war, our side and the Imperial Order. There will be no bystanders. We will have unity one way or another. All lands of the Midlands must surrender to Dahara.
Dahara? Bags!
Keelan didn't look up as tears dripped from her face.
If I have to tell you again to be quiet, you will wait outside while I read this letter.
Addy took a fistful of Zed's robes and pulled him down into his chair.
Read on.
Keelan cleared her throat. I explained to the representatives that you, the Queen of Galia, were to marry me. And through your surrender and our union, it shows that this is a union forged in peace, with common goals and mutual respect, and not a matter of conquest. Lands will be allowed to retain their heritage and lawful traditions, but not their sovereignty. Magic in all forms will be protected. We will be one people, with one army, under one command, and under one law. All lands that join us through their surrender will have a say in formulating those laws.
Keelan's voice broke. I must ask you to return at once to Adendrill and surrender Galia. I must deal with matters of various lands, and your knowledge and assistance would be invaluable. I informed the representatives that surrender is mandatory. There will be no favoritism. Any who fail to surrender will be put under siege. They will not be allowed to trade with us until they surrender. If they do not surrender willingly, with all the benefits that that entails, and we are compelled to gain their surrender by force of arms, then they will not only forfeit those benefits, but incur sanctions as well. As I said, there will be no bystanders. We will be one. My queen, I would give my life for you and want nothing more than to be your husband. But if my actions turn your heart against me, I would not force your hand in marriage. Understand, though, that the surrender of your land is necessary and vital. We must live by one law. I cannot afford to show special favors to any land, or we are lost before we begin.
Keelan had to pause to gasp back a sob. She could hardly read the watery words wavering before her eyes.
Mriswith have attacked the city.
A low whistle came from between Zed's teeth. She ignored it and read on.
With Gratch's help, I have put their remains on pikes to decorate the front lawn of the Confessor's palace, so all may see the fate of our enemies. Mriswith can be invisible at will. Besides myself, only Gratch can detect them when they are shrouded by their cloaks.
I fear they will come for you, so I have sent Gratch for protection. We must remember one thing above all others. The Order wishes to destroy magic. They are not shy about using it, though. It is our magic they wish to destroy. Please tell my grandfather that he too must return at once. His ancestral home is in danger. This is why I had to take Adendril and cannot leave. I fear to let the enemy have my grandfather's ancestral home and the dire consequences that would ensue. Zed couldn't keep silent.
Bags, he whispered to himself as he came to his feet again. Richard's talking about the Wizard's Keep. He didn't want to write it, but that's what he's referring to. How could I be so stupid? The boy is right. We can't let them have the keep. There are things of powerful magic in there that the Order would dearly pay to put their hands on. Richard doesn't know about the magic in there, but he's smart enough to understand the danger. I've been a blind fool.
With a cold fright, Kaelin realized the truth of it too. If the Order were to take the keep, they would have access to enormously powerful magic.
Zed, Richard is there all alone. He knows almost nothing about magic. He doesn't know anything about the kind of people in Adendril who can use magic. He's a fawn in a bear's den. Dear spirits, he has no idea of the danger he's in.
Zed nodded grimly.
The boy's in over his head.
Addy let out a mocking laugh.
In over his head. He has stolen Adendril and access to the keep right from under the nose of the Order. They have sent Mriswit against him, and he puts them on pikes outside the palace. He probably has the lands on the verge of surrender into a union that can fight the Order. The very thing we were trying to think how to accomplish. He be using the very thing that be our problem. Trade. And uses even that as a weapon to force their hand. He not be waiting to try to reason with them. He has simply put a knife to their throats. If they start falling to him, he could very well soon have the whole of the Midlands in his fist. The important lands, anyway. And with them all joined with Dahara as one force, one command, Zed said. It could be a force that could stand against the Order.
He turned to Kaelin.
Is there any more?
She nodded.
A bit. Though I fear greatly for my heart, I fear too the results should I fail to act. For the shadow of tyranny that will forever darken the world. If we don't do this, then Ebenicia's fate will have been only the beginning. I will put my faith in your love, though I can't help fearing this test of it. Though I am surrounded by bodyguards, and one has already laid down her life for me, their presence is not what I need to feel secure. You all must return to Adendril at once. Do not delay. Gratch will keep you safe from the Mriswith until you are with me. Signed, yours in this world and those beyond, Richard Rawl, Master of Dahara.
Zed whistled through his teeth again.
Master of Dahara? What has that boy done?
Kaelin lowered the letter in her trembling hands.
He has destroyed me. That is what he has done.
Addy lifted a thin finger in her direction.
Now, you listen to me, Mother Confessor. Richard knows very well what he be doing to you, and has laid his heart open to you for it. He told you that he writes that letter under the image of Magda Cirrus, because he be pained by what he must do, and understands what it means to you. He would rather lose your heart than let you be killed by what will come if he bows to the past instead of minding the future. He has done what we could not do. We would be begging for unity. He has demanded it, and put teeth to the demand. If you wish to truly be the Mother Confessor, and put the safety of your people above all else, then you will help Richard.
Zed lifted an eyebrow but remained silent. At the name, Gratch spoke up.
Gratch, look, Gratchog!
Kaelin wiped a tear from her cheek and sniffled.
I love Richard, too.
Kaelin, Zed said reassuringly. Just as the spell will be removed from you in time, I'm sure that you will once again be the Mother Confessor.
You don't understand, she said, holding back the tears. For thousands of years, a Mother Confessor has always protected the Midlands through the Alliance. I will be the Mother Confessor who failed the Midlands.
Zed shook his head.
No, you will be the Mother Confessor who had the strength to save the people of the Midlands.
She put a hand to her heart.
I'm not so sure. Zed stepped closer.
Kaelin, Richard is the seeker of truth. He carries the sword of truth. I am the one who named him. As first wizard, I recognized him as the one with the instincts of the seeker. He is acting on those instincts. Richard is a rare person. He reacts as the seeker, and with the use of the gift, he is doing what he thinks he must. We must put our faith in him, even if we don't fully understand why he is doing what he is doing. Bags, he may not even fully understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Read the letter again to yourself, Addie said. Listen to his words with your heart, and you will feel his heart in them. And remember, too, that there may be things he didn't dare to put on the paper in case it be captured.
Kaelin wiped the back of her hand across her nose.
I know it sounds selfish, but that's not it. I am the Mother Confessor. A trust has been passed down to me from all those who have gone before me. When I was chosen, that trust was put into my hands. It became my responsibility. When I ascended to Mother Confessor, I swore oaths.
With a bony finger, Zed lifted her chin.
An oath to protect your people. There is no sacrifice too great for that.
Maybe so. I will think on it.
Besides her tears, Kaelin fought to keep down the hackles of anger.
I love Richard, but I would never do something like this to him. I just don't think he understands what he is doing to me, to the mother confessors before me, who have given their lives.
I think he does,
Addie said in a soft rasp. Zed's face suddenly went nearly as white as his hair.
Bags, he whispered. You don't think Richard would be foolish enough to go into the keep, do you?
Kaelin's head came up.
There are spells to protect the keep. Richard doesn't know how to use his magic. He won't know how to get past them.
Zed leaned closer to her.
You said he has subtractive magic in addition to his additive. The spells are additive. If Richard has any use of his subtractive, he will be able to walk right through even the most powerful of the spells I put on the keep.
Kaelin gasped.
He told me that at the Palace of the Prophets, he was able to simply walk through all the shields because they were additive. The only one that stopped him was the perimeter shield, and that was because it had subtractive, too.
If that boy goes into the keep, there are things in there that could kill him in a heartbeat. That's why we put shields there, so no one can get near them. Bags, there are shields that even I have not dared pass through. For someone that doesn't know what he's doing, that place is a death trap.
Zed grabbed her by the shoulders.
Kaelin, do you think he would go into the keep?
I don't know, Zed. You practically raised him. You would know better than I.
He wouldn't go in there. He knows how dangerous magic can be. He's a smart boy.
Unless he wants something.
He peered at her with one eye.
Wants something? What do you mean?
Kaelin wiped the last of the tears from her cheek.
Well, when we were with the Mud People, he wanted a gathering. The Birdman warned him that it would be dangerous. An owl brought a spirit message. It hit him right in the head, cut his scalp, and then dropped to the ground dead.
The Birdman said it was a dire warning from the spirits of the danger to Richard. Richard called the gathering anyway. That was when Dark and Rawl came back from the underworld. If Richard wants something, nothing will stop him. Zed winced.
But he doesn't want anything right now. He has no need to go in there.
Zed, you know Richard. He likes to learn things. He may decide to just go have a peek out of curiosity.
A peek can be just as deadly.
He said in a letter that one of his guards was killed.
Kaelin frowned.
In fact, he said she. Why would his guard be a woman?
Zed flailed his arms impatiently.
I don't know. What were you going to say about the guard being killed?
For all we know, it could be that someone from the Order is already in the keep, and killed her by using magic from the keep. Or it could be that he fears the Mriswith want to take the keep, and he will go there to try to protect it.
Zed ran a thumb down his smooth jaw.
He has no ideas of the dangers in Adendrill, but worse, he has no inkling of the deadly nature of the things in the keep. I remember telling him one time that objects of magic like the Sword of Truth and books were kept there. I never thought to say many were dangerous.
Kaelin clutched his arm.
Books? You told him that there were books there?
Zed grunted.
Big mistake.
Keelan let out a sigh.
I should say so.
Zed threw his arms up.
We have to get to Aidendrill at once.
He gripped Keelan by her shoulders.
Richard doesn't have control of his gift. If the Order uses magic to take the keep, Richard won't be able to stop them. We could lose this war before we have a chance to fight back.
Keelan's fists tightened.
I can't believe it. We've spent weeks running from Aidendrill, and now we have to run back there. It will take weeks more.
The sun has already set on the days we made those choices. We must concentrate on what we can do tomorrow. We can't relive yesterday.
Keelan eyed Gratch.
Richard sent us a letter. We can send him one back and warn him.
That won't help him hold the keep should they use magic.
Keelan's head was spinning with fragments of thoughts and hurried solutions.
Gratch, could you carry one of us back to Richard?
Gratch eyed each of them, his gaze lingering on the wizard. At last he shook his head. Keelan chewed her lower lip in frustration. Zed paced back and forth before the fire, muttering to himself. Addie stared off in thought. Keelan suddenly gasped.
Zed, could you use magic?
Zed halted his pacing and looked up.
What sort of magic?
Like you did with the wagon today, lifting it with magic.
I can't fly, dear one, just lift things.
But could you make us lighter, like the wagon, so that Gratch could then carry us?
Zed twisted up his wrinkled face.
No, it would be too hard to maintain the effort. It works on spiritless things, like rocks or wagons, but it's altogether another matter to do it to living things. I could lift us all up a bit, but only for a few minutes.
Could you do it for just yourself? Could you make yourself light enough so that Gratch could carry you?
Zed brightened.
Yes, perhaps. It would take a great effort to maintain it for that much time, but I think I might be able to do it.
Could you do it too, Addie?
Addie sagged in her chair.
No, I do not have the power he does. I could not do it.
Keelan swallowed back her apprehension.
Then you have to go, Zed. You can get to Aidendrell weeks before we could travel there. Richard needs you right now. We can't wait. Every minute's delay is a danger to our side.
Zed threw his skinny arms up.
I can't leave you defenseless.
I have Addie.
What if the Mriswith come, as Richard is worried about? Then you wouldn't have Gratch. Addie can't help with a Mriswith.
Keelan clutched his black sleeve.
If Richard goes in the keep, he could be killed. If the Order gets the wizard's keep and the magic in it, then we are all dead. This is more important than my life. This is about what happened to everyone in Ebenicia. If we let them win, then a great many will die, and the living will be condemned to slavery. Magic will be extinguished. This is a battle decision. Besides, no Mriswith has come yet. Just because they've attacked Aidendrill, that doesn't mean they will attack anywhere else. Anyway, the spell hides my identity. No one knows the Mother Confessor is alive, or that I am she. They have no reason to come after me.
Flawless logic. I can see why you were chosen as the Mother Confessor. But I still think it's foolhardy.
Zed appealed to the sorceress.
What do you think? I think the Mother Confessor be right. We must consider what be the most important action we can take. We must not risk everyone for a danger to a few.
Keelan stood before Gratch. With the way he was squatting down, she was eye to eye with him.
Gratch, Richard is in great danger.
Gratch's tufted ears twitched.
He needs Zed to help him, and you too. I'll be safe enough. No Mriswith have been here. Can you get Zed to Aidendrill?
He's a wizard and can make himself easy for you to carry. Will you do it for me? For Richard?
Gratch's glowing eyes moved among the three of them, considering. At last he rose, his leathery wings spread as he nodded. Keelan hugged the Gar, and he returned the tender embrace.
Are you tired, Gratch? Do you want to rest, or can you leave right now?
Gratch flapped his wings in answer. In growing alarm, Zed looked from one to the other.
Bags! This is the most foolish thing I've ever done. If I was meant to fly, I'd have been born a bird.
Keelan offered a weak smile.
Jebra said she had a vision of you with wings.
Zed planted his fists on his bony hips.
She also said she saw me being dropped into a ball of fire.
He tapped his foot.
All right, let's get going then.
Addie stood to seize him in a hug.
You be a brave old fool.
Zed grumbled in disgust.
Fool indeed.
He finally returned the embrace. He let out a sudden yelp when she pinched his bottom.
"You look handsome in your fine robes, old man."
Zed was overcome with a helpless grin.
"Well, I guess I do."
A frown returned.
"A little, anyway. Take care of the mother confessor. When Richard finds out I left her to make her own way back, he may do more than pinch me."
Kaylin threw her arms around the skinny wizard, feeling suddenly forsaken. Zed was Richard's grandfather, and it had made her feel at least a little better having that much of Richard with her. When they parted, Zed cast a wincing glance to the gar.
"Well, Gratch, I guess we had best be on our way."
In the cold night air, Kaylin caught the wizard's sleeve. "Zed, we have to talk some sense into Richard." Her voice heated.
"He can't do this to me. He's being unreasonable."
Zed studied her face in the dim light. He spoke softly at last.
"History is rarely made by reasonable men."
Chapter 35.
"Don't touch anything,"
Richard reminded them again as he scowled over his shoulder.
"I mean it."
The three Mordsith didn't answer. They turned to look up at the high ceiling of the arched entry and then at the huge, intricately joined blocks of dark granite just inside the raised, massive portcullis, marking the entrance to the wizard's keep. Richard glanced back past Ulic and Egan to the wide road that had led them up the mountainside and at last over a stone bridge 250 paces long that spanned a chasm with near-vertical sides that dropped away for what seemed thousands of feet. He wasn't sure of the full depth of the yawning abyss, because in the far distance below, clouds hugging the ice-slicked walls obscured the bottom. Walking over the bridge and looking down into that dark, jagged maw made him dizzy and lightheaded. He couldn't imagine how the stone bridge could have been erected over such an obstacle. Unless one had wings, there was but this single way into the keep. Lord Rawl's official escort of 500 men waited back on the other side of the bridge. They had intended to come with him into the keep until they had reached that spot, having just rounded a switchback, and every eye, including his, had looked up at the vastness of the keep, its soaring walls of dark stone, its ramparts, bastions, towers, connecting passageways and bridges, all of which presented an unmistakable sensation of sinister menace, jutting from the stone of the mountain, somehow looking alive, as if it were watching them. Richard's knees had gone weak at the sight, and when he ordered them to wait there, none had raised so much as a single word of protest. It had taken considerable will for Richard to force himself to go on, but the idea of all those men seeing their Lord Rawl, their wizard, balk at going into the wizard's keep, kept his feet moving when he would have wished otherwise. Besides, he needed to do this. Richard summoned courage by remembering Kaylin telling him that the keep was protected by spells, and that there were places even she couldn't go, because those spells so sapped one of courage that they couldn't proceed. That's all it was, he assured himself. Just a spell to keep the curious away, only a feeling and not a real threat.
"It's warm here,"
Raina said, her dark eyes looking about in astonishment. Richard realized she was right. Once they were beyond the iron portcullis, the air had lost its chill with each step, until it was like a fine spring day inside. The somber, steel-gray sky into which the sheer mountainside ascended above the keep, and bitter wind on the road up, held no hint of spring, though. The snow in his boots was beginning to melt. They all took off their heavy mantles and tossed them in a pile to the side, against the stone wall. Richard checked that his sword was clear in its scabbard. The towering, arched opening they passed beneath was a good 50 feet long. Richard saw that it was merely a breach in the outer wall. Beyond, the road continued through an open area before tunneling into the base of a high stone wall and disappearing into the gloom beyond. Probably just went to the stables, he told himself. No reason to go in there. Richard had to resist the urge to shroud himself in his black Mriswith cape and become invisible. He had been doing that more and more of late, finding comfort not only in the solitude it provided, but in an odd, indefinably pleasurable sensation it invoked, almost like the reassurance of the magic of the sword at his hip, always there, always at his beck and call, always his ally and champion. All around, intricate junctures of masonry walls created of the bleak courtyard a craggy canyon, its walls dotted by a number of doors.
Richard chose to follow a stepping stone path through the gravel of granite fragments to the largest of the doors. Verdine suddenly clutched his arm so hard he winced in pain, turning away from the door to pry off her fingers.
"Verdine," he said, "what are you doing? What's the matter?"
He extricated his arm from her grasp, but she grabbed it again.
"Look,"
she finally said in a tone of voice that made the hair at the back of his neck stand on end.
"What do you suppose that is?"
Everyone turned to see where she pointed with her aegil. Rock fragments and stones rolled in waves, as if some huge stone fish swam beneath their surface. As the unseen thing underneath came closer, they all inched toward the center of their stepping stone. The gravel crunched and gnashed as it undulated in waves like water in a lake. Berdine's grasp on his arm tightened painfully as the crest of the waves approached. Even Ulrich and Egan gasped with the rest of them as it seemed to pass beneath the stepping stones under their feet, the waves lapping stone chips up onto the rocks upon which they stood. Once beyond, the rolling movement of the gravel abated until all was still.
"All right, just what was that?" Berdine blurted out. "And what would have happened to us if we had gone a different way, to one of the other doors, instead of along the only path to this one?"
"How should I know?" She blinked up at him.
"You're a wizard. You're supposed to know these things."
Verdine would have fought Ulrich and Egan by herself without a second thought if he were to command it, but unseen magic was something altogether different. All five of them were fearless against steel, but none of them were the least bit shy about letting him see their anxiety toward magic. They had explained it to him any number of times. They were the steel against steel, so that he could be the magic against magic.
"Look, all of you, I've told you before that I don't know very much about being a wizard. I've never been to this place before. I don't know anything about it. I don't know how to protect you. Now, will you do as I asked and wait with the soldiers on the other side of the bridge, please?"
Ulrich and Egan folded their arms in mute reply.
"We're going with you," Kara insisted.
"That's right," Reyna added.
"You can't stop us," Verdine said as she finally released his arm. "But it could be dangerous."
"And we must protect you," Verdine said.
Richard scowled down at her.
"How? By squeezing the blood out of my arm?"
Verdine turned red.
"Sorry."
"Look, I don't know about the magic here. I don't know the dangers, much less how to stop them."
"That is why we must go," Kara explained with exaggerated patience. "You don't know how to protect yourself. We might be of help. Who's to say that an aegil," she lifted a thumb to Ulrich and Egan, "or muscles aren't what will be needed? What if you fall down a simple hole with no ladder, and there is no one to hear you call for help? You could be hurt by something not magic, you know."
Richard sighed.
"Well, all right, I guess you have a point."
He shook a finger at her. "But if you get your foot bitten off by some stone fish or something, don't you complain to me about it." The three women grinned in satisfaction. Even Ulrich and Egan smiled. Richard let out a weary sigh.
"Come on, then."
He turned toward the 12-foot-tall door set back in an alcove. The wood was gray and weathered, and spanned with simple but massive iron straps, spiked on with cut nails as big as his fingers. Above the door, words were carved in the stone lintel, but they were in a language none of them could understand. As Richard reached for the lever, the door began to move inward on silent hinges.
"And he says he doesn't know how to use his magic," Verdine mocked.
Richard checked the resolve in their eyes one last time.
"Remember, don't touch anything."
They nodded. He heaved a resigned sigh and turned toward the doorway, scratching the back of his neck.
"Didn't the unguent I brought rid you of your rash?" Kara asked as they stepped through the doorway into the cheerless room beyond. It smelled of damp stone. "No, not yet, anyway."
Inside the vast entry chamber, their voices echoed off the beamed ceiling, which was some 30 feet high. Richard slowed as he peered around the near-empty room and came to a halt.
"The woman I bought it from promised me it would cure your rash. She said it was made with the usual common ingredients, like white rhubarb, juice of laurel, butter, and soft-boiled egg. But when I told her that it was most important, she added some special costly elements. She said she put in betony, pig's ulcer, a swallow's heart, and because I am your protector, she had me bring her my moon blood. She stirred it in with a red-hot nail. I stayed and watched, just to make sure."
"I wish you had told me this before I'd used it," Richard muttered as he started ahead into the gloomy chamber.
"What?"
He waved off her question. Well, I warned her that it had better work for the amount I paid, and told her that if it didn't, I would be back and she would rue the day she failed. She promised it would work. You did remember to put some on your left heel, like I told you, didn't you? No, I just put it on the rash. Now he wished he hadn't. Kara threw her hands up.
Well, no wonder. I told you that you had to put it on your left heel, too. The woman said the rash was probably a disruption in the basing of your aura, and you had to put it on your heel, too, to complete the connection to the earth.
Richard only half listened to her. He knew she was merely trying to find courage in the sound of her own voice by keeping the subject mundane. High overhead to their right, a row of small windows poured long, slanting shafts of daylight across the room. Ornately carved wooden chairs stood watch to each side of an arched opening at the far end. Beneath the row of windows hung a tapestry, its image too faded to be discerned. The opposite wall held a row of candles and simple iron sconces. A heavy trestle table sat near the center of the room, bathed in a brilliant shaft of light. The room was otherwise bare. They crossed the floor, accompanied by the echoes of the sounds of their boots on the tiles. Richard saw that there were books on the table. His hopes elevated. Books were why he had come. It could be weeks yet before Kaelin and Zed made it back, and he feared that he might need to take action to protect the keep before then. He was becoming restive and worried while he waited. With the Dharan army holding Adendril, his biggest threat right now was an assault to seize the keep. He hoped to find books that might impart some knowledge, maybe even tell him how to use some of his magic, so that if someone with magic attacked, he might gain a key to warding them off. He feared the Order would try to snatch some of the magic preserved in the keep. Mriswith, too, were in his thoughts. There were nearly a dozen books on the table, all the same size. The words on the covers were not in a language he could understand. Ulic and Egan stood with their backs to the table, while Richard slid some of the books aside with a finger to better see ones underneath. Something looked familiar about them. They look like the same book, but in different languages, he remarked, half to himself. He turned around one that caught his eye so he could look at the title, and suddenly realized that though he couldn't read it, he had seen the language before, and he recognized two of the words. The first, Fuer, and the third, Ost, were words he knew only too well. The title was in High Dharan, a prophecy that Warren had shown him in the vaults at the Palace of the Prophets, and referred to Richard, calling him Fuer Grisa Ost Draka, the bringer of death. The first word in this title, Fuer, meant the, and the third, Ost, meant of. Fuer Ulbrechen Ost Brinica Dicer. Richard let out a frustrated sigh. I wish I knew what it meant. The Adventures of Bonnie Day, I think. Richard turned to see Berdine looking past his shoulder at the table. She stepped back, her blue eyes glancing away as if she thought she had done something wrong. What did you say? He whispered. Berdine pointed at the book on the table. Fuer Ulbrechen Ost Brinica Dicer. You said you wished to know what it meant. I think it means The Adventures of Bonnie Day. It's an old dialect. The Adventures of Bonnie Day was a book Richard had owned since his early youth. It had been his favorite book, and he had read it so often he practically knew it by heart. Only after going to the Palace of the Prophets in the Old World had he discovered that the book had been written by Nathan Rahl, a prophet and Richard's ancestor. Nathan had written the book as a primer on prophecy, he said, and had given it to boys who had potential. Nathan had told Richard that with the exception of Richard, all who had possessed the book had met with fatal accidents. When Richard was born, the prelate and Nathan had come to the New World and stolen the Book of Counted Shadows from the keep, in order to prevent it from falling into Darkin Rawl's hands. They gave it to Richard's stepfather, George Cipher, and extracted his promise to make Richard memorize the entire book, word for word, and then destroy it. The Book of Counted Shadows was needed in order to open the boxes of Ordin back in Dahara. Richard still knew that book by heart, every word. Richard remembered fondly the happy times of his youth, living at home with his father and brother. He had loved his older brother and looked up to him. Who knew then the treacherous turns life would take? There was no going back to those innocent times. Nathan had also left behind a copy of The Adventures of Bonnie Day for him. He must have also left these copies in other languages here at the keep when he had been here right after Richard had been born. How do you know what it says? Richard asked.
Verdine swallowed.
It's in High Daharan, but an old dialect of the tongue.
Richard realized, by the way her eyes had gone wide, that he must have a frightening look on his face. He put in an effort to smooth his features.
You mean to say that you understand High Daharan?
She nodded.
I was told that it's a dead language. A scholar I know who could understand High Daharan told me that almost no one anymore knows it. How do you?
From my father, she said. The emotion left her voice. It was one of the reasons Darkin Rawl chose me to be Mordsith. Her face had gone emotionless, too.
Few people still understood High Daharan. My father was one of them. Darkin Rawl used High Daharan to work some of his magic, and he didn't like that there were others who knew the old tongue.
Richard didn't have to ask what had happened to her father.
I'm sorry, Berdine. He knew that in their training, those forced into the bondage of becoming Mordsith were compelled to torture their fathers to death. It was called the Third Breaking, their final test.
She showed no reaction. She had retreated behind the iron mask of her training.
Darkin Rawl knew that my father had taught me some of the old tongue, but being Mordsith, I was no threat to him. He consulted with me on occasion to hear my interpretation of various words. High Daharan is a difficult language to translate. Many words, especially in the older dialects, have shades of meaning that can only be understood by their context. I am no expert by any means, but I understand some.
Darkin Rawl was a master at High Daharan.
And you know the meaning of Fuergrisa Ast Draca, a very ancient dialect. I'm not terribly well versed in versions that old,
she thought a moment.
I think the literal translation is the bringer of death. Where did you hear this?
He didn't want to think of the complications of the other meanings at the moment.
An old prophecy. It gives me this name.
Berdine clasped her hands behind her back.
Unfairly, Lord Rawl, unless it is in reference to your skill at handling your enemies, not your friends.
Richard smiled. Thank you, Berdine. Her smile returned, like the sun from behind fading storm clouds.
Let's go see what else we can find of interest in here, he said, heading for the arched opening at the far end of the chamber.
As he went through the doorway, Richard felt a tingling, tickling sensation pass across his flesh in a razor's edge line. Once beyond the opening, it was gone. He turned when he heard Reyna calling his name. The rest of them, on the other side, pressed their hands up against the air as if it were a sheet of impenetrable glass. Ulic beat his fists against it, but to no avail.
Lord Rawl, Kara called out. How do we pass through?
Richard returned to the doorway.
I'm not sure. I have magic that allows me to pass shields. Here, Berdine, give me your hand. See if that will work.
He stuck his hand back through the invisible barrier, and she gripped his wrist without hesitation. Slowly, he pulled her hand toward him until it penetrated the shield.
Oh, that's cold, she complained.
You all right? You want to try the rest of the way? When she nodded, he pulled her on. Once through, she shuddered and shook herself as if she were crawling with bugs. Kara put her hand out toward the doorway.
Now me.
Richard began to reach for her, but stopped.
No. The rest of you wait here until we come back.
What? Kara shrieked.
You have to take us with you.
There are dangers I know nothing about. I can't be watching out for all of you and at the same time pay attention to what I'm doing.
Berdine is enough in case I need protection. The rest of you wait here. If anything happens, you know how to get out.
But you have to take us, Kara pleaded.
We can't leave you without protection, she turned. Tell him, Ulic.
She's right, Lord Rawl. We should be with you.
Richard shook his head. One is enough. If something happened to me, then you wouldn't be able to get back out through the shield. If anything happens and we don't return, I'm depending on you to carry on. If anything happens, you are in charge, Kara. If anything happens, get help for us if you can. If you can't, well, take care of things until my grandfather Zed and Kaelin get here.
Don't do this!
Kara looked more distraught than he had ever seen her.
Lord Rawl, we can't afford to lose you.
Kara, it will be all right. We'll be back, I promise.
Wizards always keep their promises. Kara huffed in anger.
Why her?
Berdine flipped her wavy brown braid back over her shoulder as she flashed Kara a self-satisfied smile.
Because Lord Rawl likes me best.
Kara, Richard said as he scowled at Berdine.
It's because you're the leader.
If anything happens to me, I want you to be in charge." Kara stood a moment, considering. A self-satisfied smile of her own finally spread on her lips.
"All right, but you better never pull a trick like this again."
Richard winked at her.
"If you say so."
He looked up the gloomy corridor. "Come on, Berdine. Let's go have a look around so we can finish and get out of this place."
Chapter 36. Passageways ran in every direction. Richard tried to keep to what he thought was the main one so that he could find his way out. As they passed rooms, he stuck his head in to see if there were any books or anything else that might be helpful. Most were simple, empty stone rooms. A few had tables and chairs, with chests or other plain furniture, but nothing of particular interest. One whole hall had rooms with beds. The wizards who stayed at the keep must have lived unassuming lives, at least some of them. There were thousands of rooms, and he had only seen a few. Berdine peeked past him whenever he looked into a room to see what he was seeing.
"Do you know where we are going?"
"Not exactly." He glanced off down another side hall. The place was a labyrinth. "But I think we should find some stairs. Start at the bottom and work our way up." She pointed back over her shoulder.
"I saw some down a hall to our left, just back there."
The stairs were where she said they would be. He hadn't noticed them because it was just a hole in the floor with spiral stone steps descending down into darkness, and he had been looking for a stairwell. Richard reprimanded himself for not thinking to bring a lamp or candle. He had a flint and steel in his pocket, and guessed that if he could find some straw or old cloth, he could get a small flame going and light one of the candles he had seen in iron sconces. As they descended into the darkness, Richard felt, as well as heard, a low hum coming from below. The stone, which had been disappearing in darkness, began to reveal itself in a bluish-green light, as if someone were turning up the wick on a lamp. By the time they reached the bottom of the steps, he could see clearly in the eerie light. Just around the corner at the bottom of the steps, he found the source of the light. In a ringed iron bracket sat a globe, about as wide as his hand, and looking to be glass. It was the origin of the light. Berdine looked up at him, her face outlined in the strange illumination.
"What makes it glow?"
"Well, there's no flame, so I would guess it has to be magic." Richard cautiously reached toward the light. It brightened. He touched a finger to it, and the bluish-green cast changed to a warmer yellow color. Since touching it seemed to cause no harm, Richard carefully lifted it from the bracket. It was heavier than he expected. Rather than being a hollow sphere of blown glass, it seemed to be solid. In his hand it threw off a warm, useful light. Richard could see that far off down the tunnel-like hall there were other such spheres and brackets. In the distance, the closest barely glowed with bluish-green light. As they passed them, each brightened at his approach and dimmed as he moved on with the one he had taken. At an intersection, the hall joined a wider, more welcoming corridor. Light pink stone ran in a band down both sides, and at places the passageway opened into cavernous rooms with padded benches. Opening the wide, double doorways in one of the corridor's big rooms, he discovered a library. The library looked cozy and inviting with its polished wood floor, paneled walls, and whitewashed ceiling. There were tables beside the rows of shelves and comfortable-looking chairs. Glassed windows at the far side overlooked the city of Adendrill and made the room bright and airy. He moved on to the next cavernous chamber in the hall and discovered that it too had a library off of it. It appeared that the corridor ran parallel to the face of the keep and along a whole row of libraries. They found another 24 of the huge library rooms by the time they reached the end of the corridor. Richard had never imagined that this many books existed. Even in the vaults at the Palace of the Prophets, with all the books it held, seemed sparse to him after seeing this many volumes. It would take a year just to read all the titles. He felt suddenly overwhelmed. Where was he to start?
"This must be what you were looking for," she said.
Richard frowned.
"No, it's not. I don't know why, but this isn't it. This is too ordinary."
Berdine walked beside him as they moved on through passageways and down several stories when they came to a stairwell, her Aegil swinging on the chain at her wrist and ever at the ready. At the bottom of the stair stood an ornate, gold-leafed doorframe before a chamber beyond that, rather than stonework, had been excavated from inky rock, perhaps once a cave that had been enlarged. In places where the rock had been broken away,
It left behind glossy, sharp facets. Fat columns looked to have been left in places as the rock had been carved out in order to support a low, craggy ceiling. At the gold doorway, Richard encountered a shield for the fourth time since he had entered the keep. But this was different than the first three. The first three all had the same feel. This was nothing like the others. As he put his hand through, the vertical plane between the doorframe glowed red from no visible source, and the sensation, instead of the tingling, was hot where the red light touched him. It was the most uncomfortable shield he had ever felt. He feared it might singe the hair off his arms, but it didn't. Richard pulled his arm back. "This one is different. If it's more than you want to do, you stop me." He put his arms around Berdine to better protect her. She tensed. "Don't worry. I'll stop if you want me to." She nodded, and he shuffled into the doorway. When the red light touched the red leather on her arm, she flinched.
"It's all right," she said. "Keep going."
He pulled her through and released her. Only after he took his arms from around her did she seem to relax. The glow of the sphere Richard held out cast sharp shadows among the columns, and he could see that there were small recesses carved in the stone all around the room. At the wall around the edge of the room, there were perhaps 60 or 70 such niches. Though he couldn't make out what was in them, he could tell that each held objects of different sizes and shapes. Richard felt the hairs on the back of his neck stiffen as his gaze swept over the nooks from a distance. He didn't know what the things were, but he instinctively knew that they were more than dangerous.
"Stay close to me," he told her. "We want to stay away from the walls."
He pointed with his chin across the vast room.
"Over there, that passageway is where we want to go." "How do you know that?" "Look at the floor."
The rough, natural stone was worn smooth in a winding track, cutting across the center of the chamber.
"We'd better stay on this path."
Her blue eyes glanced up in unease.
"You be careful. If anything happens to you, I'll never get out of this place to get help from the others. I'll be trapped down here."
Richard smiled and then started out across the dead, silent cavern.
"Well, that's the risk you take for being my favorite."
Her unease didn't diminish at his attempt to lighten the mood.
"Lord Rawl, do you really think that I believe I am your favorite?"
Richard checked that they were still on the path. "Berdine, I only said that because it's what you always say." She thought in silence as they moved cautiously across the room.
"Lord Rawl, may I ask you a question? A serious question. A personal question."
"Sure."
She pulled her wavy brown braid over her shoulder and held onto it.
"When you marry your queen, you will still have other women, won't you?"
Richard frowned down at her.
"I don't have other women now. I love Kaelin. I'm loyal in my love to her."
"But you are the Lord Rawl. You can have any you wish, even me. That is what the Lord Rawl does. He has many women. You have but to snap your fingers."
Richard got the distinct impression that she was definitely not making an offer.
"Is this about when I put my hand on you, on your breast?"
She glanced away and nodded.
"Berdine, I did that to help you, not because of anything else. I hoped you would know that."
She quickly laid a concerned hand on his arm.
"I do know. That's not what I mean. You've never touched me in the other way. What I mean is that you never make those requirements of me."
She chewed her lower lip.
"The way you put your hand on me has me feeling very ashamed."
"Why?"
"Because you risked your life to help me. You are my Lord Rawl, and I have not been honest with you."
Richard gestured, guiding them on the path around a column 20 men couldn't have held hands around.
"You're getting me confused, Berdine."
"Well, I say that I am your favorite, so that you will not think I don't like you."
"You are trying to say you don't like me?"
She clutched his arm again.
"Oh, no, I love you."
"Berdine, I told you I have—"
"Not like that. I mean, I love you as my Lord Rawl. You have freed me. You have seen that I am more than simply Mord Sith, and you have trusted me. You saved my life and returned me to whole. I love you for the kind of Lord Rawl you are."
Richard shook his head as if to clear it.
"You're not making any sense. What does this have to do with you always saying that you're my favorite?"
"I say that so you won't think I wouldn't willingly go to your bed if asked. I feared that if you knew that I didn't want to, then you would force me to be perverse."
Richard held the light out as they reached the passageway leading from the room. It looked a simple block hall.
Stop fretting about it. He motioned her onward. I've told you I wouldn't.
I know. And after what you did,
she touched her left breast,
I believe you.
But I didn't before.
I'm beginning to see that you really are different in more ways than a few.
Different from who?
Doc and Rawl.
Well, you're right about that. As they walked on down the long hall, again he suddenly looked at her.
Are you trying to tell me that you're in love with someone, and you have only been saying those things to me so that I wouldn't think you were trying to avoid my affections, and therefore wouldn't be provoked to force you? Her fist tightened on her braid as her blue eyes closed for a moment.
Yes.
Really? I think that's wonderful, Berdine.
At the end of the hall, they came to a broad room, the walls lined with bundled tufts of fur and hair hanging from framed panels. Richard studied the displays from a distance. He recognized one tuft as Gar fur. Richard looked over as he started out again and grinned.
Who is it?
He waved his hand, feeling a sudden flush of embarrassment that, considering her odd mood at the moment, he might be overstepping his bounds.
Unless you don't want to tell me. You don't have to tell me.
I don't want you to feel you have to. It's your business if you choose. Berdine swallowed.
Because of the things you have done for us, for me, I wish to confess.
Richard made a face.
Confess? Telling me who you're in love with isn't a confession, it's...
Reyna.
Richard's mouth snapped shut. He looked back to the way they were going.
Green tiles, left foot only, right foot only on the white ones, until we cross this space. Don't skip a green or white tile. Touch the pedestal before you step from the last tile.
She followed him as he stepped carefully from the green to the white tiles until they had reached the stone floor on the other side, touched the pedestal, and moved into a tall, narrow corridor of sparkling silver stone, like a cleft in a huge jewel.
How did you know that? The green tile, white tile business.
What?
He glanced back with a frown.
I don't know. It must have been a shield or something.
He looked back to her as she walked with her eyes on the floor.
Berdine, I love Reyna too, and Kara, and you, and Ulik, and Egan. Kind of like family. Is that what you mean?
She shook her head without looking up.
But Reyna is a woman.
Berdine shot him a cool scowl.
Berdine, he said after a long silence. You had better not tell Reyna this, or...
Reyna loves me too.
Richard straightened, not knowing quite what to say.
But how can... You can't... I don't see...
Berdine, why are you telling me this?
Because you have always been honest with us. At first, when you told us things, we thought you would not do as you said. Well, not all of us. Kara has always believed you, but I did not.
Her expression slipped back to the distant countenance of a Mord Sith.
When Darkon Rawl was our Lord Rawl, he found out, and he ordered me to his bed. He laughed at me. He liked to take me to his bed because he knew. It was his way of humiliating me. I thought that if you knew too, you would do the same, so I tried to hide it from you by making you think I fancied you.
Richard shook his head. Berdine, I wouldn't do that to you.
I know that now. That is why I had to confess to you, because you've always been honest with me, but I was not honest with you.
Richard shrugged.
Well, then I'm glad you feel better.
He thought as he turned her down a winding hall of plastered walls.
Did Darkon Rawl make you this way? By choosing you to become a Mord Sith? Is that what made you hate men?
She frowned up at him.
I do not hate men. I don't know. I just always looked at girls from the time I was young. Boys didn't interest me in that way.
She drew her hand down her braid.
Now you hate me?
No, I don't hate you, Berdine. You are my protector, the same as always. But can't you try to not think about her or something? It just isn't right.
She smiled distantly.
When Reyna smiles at me in her special way, and the day is suddenly wonderful, it seems right. When she touches my face, and my heart races, it seems right. I know my heart is safe in her care.
Her smile withered.
But now you think I am despicable.
Richard looked away, shame coming over him in a cold wave.
That's the way I feel about Kaelin. One time my grandfather said I should forget about her, but there was no way I could.
Why would he say that?
Richard couldn't tell her that it was because Kaelin was a confessor, and Zed was doing it for Richard's best interest. No one was supposed to be able to love a confessor. He felt bad that he couldn't be honest with Berdine now. He shrugged. He didn't think she was the one for me. Richard pulled her through another of the tingly kind of shields when they reached the end of the hall. The triangular room had a bench. He sat her down beside him and set the glowing ball between them.
Berdine, I think I can see how you feel. I know how I felt when my grandfather said I should forget Kaelin. No one else can tell you what to feel. You either do or you don't. Though I don't understand or approve of this, all of you are becoming my friends. Being a friend means you don't have to be exactly alike, and you are still friends.
Lord Rawl, I know that you can never accept me, but I had to tell you. Tomorrow, I will return to Dahara. You should not have to have one you do not approve of as your guard.
Richard thought a minute. Do you like boiled peas? Berdine frowned.
Yes.
Well, I hate boiled peas. Does that make you like me any less because I dislike something you like? Or make you want to abandon being my protector? She made a face.
Lord Rawl, this is different from boiled peas. How can you have faith in someone you do not approve of?
It's not that I don't approve of you, Berdine. It's just that, to me, it doesn't seem right. But it doesn't have to. Look, I had a friend when I was younger, another woods guide. Giles and I spent a lot of time together because we had a lot in common. He fell in love with Lucy Fleckner. I hated Lucy Fleckner. She was cruel to Giles. I couldn't understand how he could care for her. I didn't like her, and I thought he should feel the same. I lost my friend because he couldn't be the way I thought he should be. I didn't lose him because of Lucy. I lost him because of me. I lost all the good things we had because I wasn't willing to let him be who he was. I've always regretted what I lost. I guess this is something like that. As you learn to be other than Mord Sith, like I learned as I grew up, you'll find that being a friend is to like a person for who they are, even the parts you don't understand. The reasons you like them makes the things you don't understand unimportant. You don't have to understand, or do the same, or live their lives for them. If you truly care for them, then you want them to be who they are. That was why you liked them in the first place.
I like you, Berdine, and that's all that matters.
True?
True.
She put her arms around his neck and hugged him.
Thank you, Lord Rawl. After you saved me, I feared you would wish you hadn't. I'm glad I told you now.
Reyna will be relieved to know you will not do to us as Darkin Rawl did. As they stood, a part of the stone wall slid to the side. Richard took her hand and led her from the odd room, through a new doorway, down a stairway, and through a dank, wet room with a stone floor that mounded into a huge hump in the center.
If we are becoming your friends, then I can tell you what you did that I don't like, what I don't approve of, and how you did a wrong.
Richard nodded.
I don't like what you did to Kara. She is angry at what you did to her.
Richard glanced back in the strange room that seemed to swallow the light.
Kara? Angry with me? What did I do to her? You have treated her badly because of me.
When Richard wrinkled his face in puzzlement, she went on.
When I was under that spell and I threatened you with my Ajeel after you came back from looking for Brogan, you became angry with all of us. You treated them like they had done it too, though it was only I.
I didn't know what was going on. I felt threatened by Mord Sith because of what you did. She should realize that.
She does. But when you found out at last and made me whole again, you never told Kara and Reyna that you were wrong to treat them as if they had threatened you the same way as I. They did not.
Richard felt his face flush in the darkness.
You're right.
Now I feel terrible. Why didn't she say something?
Berdine lifted an eyebrow.
You are Lord Rawl. If you decided to beat her because you did not like the way she said good morning, she would not say anything. Then why are you saying something?
Berdine followed him into a strange corridor with a cobblestone floor only 2 feet wide and smooth, round, tube-like walls covered completely in gold.
Because you are a friend. As he looked over his shoulder and smiled his thanks, she reached out to touch the gold. Richard snatched her wrist before she could touch it.
Do that and you're dead.
She frowned at him.